This is Lou Augusta. Welcome to A Rumor of Empathy. Today's podcast is entitled Empathy, Capitalist Tool. It is part one of a series on empathy in the context of business and commerce. It is an excerpt from chapter 8 of my book, Empathy Lessons, copyright Lou Augusta. Welcome to the show. The empathy deficit in business is getting attention. Children and parents get it. Doctors and nurses get it. Teachers and students get it. Couples get it. Consultants and clients get it. Neighbors get it. What about business people? Do business people get it that empathy produces results? Practicing empathy is a neglected opportunity in business. The qualities, practices, and behaviors that help a person build a business sometimes work against expanding the person's empathy. An executive's ego, opinion, expertise, and attachment to being right raise the bar on empathizing with others who may have diverging mindsets. Hard-charging entrepreneurs find it hard to let go of their status or set aside the lessons learned in the College of Hard Knocks as they came up through the ranks. Executives and managers lose touch with the experiences, perceptions, and perspectives of customers, employees, and stakeholders. The urgent drives out the important. Management effort and time are monopolized, responding to competitive pressures, compliance issues, legal challenges, and solving technology problems. For example, according to a report from Business Solver, a human resources and talent consultancy that is engaged in some engaging and mind-bending data-based research on empathy starting in 2016, according to Business Solver, some 60% of executives believe that their organizations are empathic, whereas only 24% of their employees agree. An empathy deficit? Look at the data. 1 in 4 employees believe that empathy in their organizations is sufficient, representing no change since 2020. The stress of operating the business, deadlines, financial issues, staffing crises, software breakdowns, competition, litigation, add a pandemic into the mix, drive out empathy and a deep appreciation that a commitment to empathy is good for business. The disconnect is substantial between perceptions in the executive suite and in the cubicles and working from home kitchen Zoom sessions of workers and frontline customer-facing staff. Ironically, the empathic practices, such as the receptive, interpretive, and responsive processes that make up the definition of empathic responsiveness used in this work and my work, these are what are most urgently needed in dealing with customer demands, employee crises, negotiations with competitors, vendors, clients, and one's own budgeting authorities and board, optimally resolving conflicts with reduced cost and impact. When I ask business leaders, what is their budget for empathy training? The response is often a blank stare. Zero. However, when I ask the leader, what is the budget for expanded teamwork, reduced conflict, enhanced productivity, enhanced commitment to organizational goals, enhanced taking ownership of outcomes, product and service innovation, then it turns out that budget exists after all. Empathy makes a difference in connecting the dots between business skills and performance. Empathy contributes to results in a powerful way by engaging the staff's energies and commitments at a fundamental level. While every business has its own distinct commitments, in many ways, the basic empathy training in business is the same as empathy training in every other context of life. The training consists in surfacing and driving out the cynicism, denial, shame, implicit threats, and pressure that many business people experience in their communications. Empathy then spontaneously comes forth and expands the space of possibilities to do business. This does not mean that businesses do not have their own blind spots when it comes to empathy. They do. Therefore, let us take a step back and take a look at what it's going to take. An appreciation of the value of empathy to remote and promote breakthrough results often starts in sales. In business, the salespeople get it. Developing empathy with customers is good for business. Even the cynical salesperson recognizes that putting oneself in another person's shoes is a good method of selling them another pair. The salesperson gives the prospects some empathy. Shazam! The customer calls you to close the deal. Wouldn't it be nice? Yet, the basic idea is straightforward. When the customer appreciates that the salesperson is interested in the customer's requirements, that the salesperson is listening, then the customer is likely to open up and candidly share what is stressing him or her. Budget, deadline, internal politics, market dynamics, the competition. When the prospective client feels that the salesperson has understood him or her, the chance is significantly expanded that the customer will prefer to purchase the product or service from the empathic representative. Once the customer feels the salesperson is listening, the customer will share details about his needs, vulnerabilities, and shortcomings, including those about which he might otherwise be defensive, thus enabling the salesperson to position the product or service as a solution to the perceived problem or issue. This is not new news. In 1964, in the Harvard Business Review, not exactly an obscure backwater publication, David Mayer and Herbert M. Greenberg called out the two basic qualities that any salesperson must have: empathy and ego drive. These authors define empathy as the central ability to feel as other people feel in the context, and in this case, in the context of selling them a product or service. In Mayer and Greenberg's article, the sales staff were trained to interrupt themselves when they found that they were reacting defensively to customer complaints, whether legitimate or not, whether solvable or not. Stop. Hit the pause button before responding. Instead of reacting to the complaint, the salesperson was trained to get the complaint and to communicate back to the customer that he or she got it, namely that the customer was upset, or for that matter, whatever the customer was being self-expressed about. The salesperson was trained to acknowledge that a breakdown, key term, breakdown, that a breakdown had occurred. The salesperson was trained to acknowledge the complaint by calling it out. By the way, this is the training. Practice in front of a mirror. Holy mackerel, this is a breakdown. Even if the customer is inaccurate in some detail or wrong in his complaint about some aspect of what has happened or is alleged to have happened, the customer is always the customer. I guess you were going to thinking maybe that I was going to say the customer is always right, and that also has truth to it. And what you really need to get here is that the customer is always the customer. By definition, the breakdown in the product or service occurs against the expectation of customer satisfaction. The relationship between the buyer and seller is itself in breakdown against the expectation of satisfaction. Acknowledge it. This is a breakdown. We're going to have to work on this. This does not rule out the possibility that additional training is needed on the part of the customer about product features or what is the service level agreement. But such training is substantially different from a substantial defensive reaction. The next step is repairing, fixing, or managing the cause of the complaint. the respondent then solicits additional feedback. That is, in this case, the respondent is the salesperson, solicits additional feedback and details as to what the complaint is, what went wrong. The empathic response includes what one is going to do about the breakdown and by when. If you can't fix it right on the spot, one has to give one's word, make a commitment, and plan on honoring that commitment. The committed listening, that is, empathy, creates a clearing for communication, improving the sales process, and restoring authenticity to the relationship when integrity has gone missing. While there are no guarantees, customers treated in such a way tend to stick. Repeat business, maximizing revenue over the lifetime of a relationship, these are among the top outcomes. The empathic leader meets economic man. Developmental Dimensions International, that's the name of a company, DDI. We give those colleagues a shout out for the good work they're doing. DDI identifies empathy as one of the critical success factors in executive leadership. One of the leading talent development corporations in the market, Development Dimensions International, DDI's report on high-resolution leadership identifies empathy as an emotional quotient, EQ, anchor skill. Think emotional intelligence, but we're giving it kind of a different spin. Empathy provides the foundation for interpersonal leadership skills such as developing subordinates, building consensus for action, encouraging engagement, supporting self-esteem, and taking responsibility. In the DDI study, listening and responding with empathy were demonstrated by 40% of executive profile, as opposed to 71% who demonstrated taking responsibility, or 54% who demonstrated building agreement on action to take. In other words, just to repeat, empathy was demonstrated by 40% of executives profiled. So it's not at the top of the list. They're really good at taking responsibility, the executives in question. 54%, more than average, or more than the middle point, 50%, building agreement on actions to take. In short, the conclusion is that, as regards empathy, the majority of leaders have room for expanding their performance. The good news is that using interventions designed to expand empathy, the empathy skills needed to drive business results are within reach. Thus, the empathy deficit in business is getting attention. Empathy is moving to the foreground. The role and contribution of empathy to business results is penetrating the awareness of leaders, managers, staff, and stakeholders. Closely related to the challenge of closing the empathy deficit in business is the challenge that economic man is significantly different than man as such. Here, of course, man means human being, person. Let's define our terms. The person who conducts transactions in the market is defined in business school as economic man, homo economicus. That's the Latin. The latter is significantly different than man, the human being, as such. The person in the economic theory is rational, selfish, and her or his tastes and preferences do not change. Business practices assume the organization is engaging with customers, employees, stakeholders, and leaders who fit the model of economic man. Human beings, on the other hand, do not fit the model. Most people in business do not know anyone who fits the description of economic man. Why then are we so busy trying to do business with him when he does not even exist? Well, that's kind of an edgy, polemical, confrontational approach. Nevertheless, there's a lot of weight to it. Unlike the person described in economics and business skills, human beings are limited in their reasonableness. Humans are diverse and inconsistent in their preferences. Humans are even limited in their selfishness, being generous and compassionate in unpredictable ways. The issue? Nobel Prize-winning economist Gary Becker and Gary Becker's rational choice theory, also called preference theory in economics, has been extended to many other aspects of life. Becker's rational choice theory has been extended to areas as diverse as marriage, crime, discrimination. The list is long and growing. Generalizations from rational choice theory to the social sciences at large have been a growth industry in the social sciences. From the rich mixture of inconsistencies and contradictions that most people really are in life, the human being was translated into a function of rational, self-interested, and allegedly consistent preferences. The human, as such, has been simplified and redescribed as rational, a rational, calculating engine of human behavior. People are supposed to be consistent in their preferences and tastes. People are supposed to be logical and consistently obey the rules. But finding counterexamples is easy. For example, if a person prefers coffee to hot chocolate, and the person also prefers hot chocolate to tea, then according to the logic, the person is supposed to prefer coffee to tea. Think, coffee preferred over hot chocolate preferred over tea, therefore coffee preferred over tea. Well, according to the transitive rule. But no, it doesn't work that way. Given all these personal preferences as indicated, the person still prefers tea instead of coffee. The person just prefers tea to coffee. The individual is from London. Nothing inherently illogical exists in preferring coffee to hot chocolate and tea to coffee, while also preferring hot chocolate to tea. Nothing unless one insists on making a dynamic network into a transitive sequence. So much for rational choice theory. The empathic leader meets economic man. Development Dimensions International, DDI, identifies empathy as one of the critical success factors in executive leadership. DDI, Development Dimensions International, is one of the leading talent development corporations in the market. DDI's report on high-resolution leadership identifies empathy as an emotional quotient, EQ, anchor skill. Empathy provides the foundation for interpersonal leadership skills such as developing subordinates, building a consensus for action, encouraging engagement, supporting self-esteem, and taking responsibility on the part of everyone in the organization, leadership, managers, staff, stakeholders. In the DDI study, listening and responding with empathy were demonstrated by 40% of executives profiled. That is, opposed to 71% of executives profiled who demonstrated taking responsibility, or 54% who demonstrated building agreement on actions to take. The conclusion is that, as regards empathy, the majority of leaders have room for expanding their performance. The good news is that, using interventions designed to expand empathy, the empathy skills needed to drive business results are within reach. Thus, the empathy deficit in business is getting attention. Empathy is moving to the foreground. The role and contribution of empathy to business results is penetrating the awareness of leaders, managers, staff, individual contributors, and stakeholders. Closely related to the challenge of closing the empathy deficit in business is the challenge that economic man, key term, economic man, is significantly different than man as such. Let's define our terms. The person, man or woman, who conducts transactions in the market is defined in business school as economic man, homo economicus. That's the Latin. The latter is significantly different than man, that is, the human being as such. The person, man, in the economic theory is rational, selfish, and her or his tastes do not change. Business practices assume the organization is engaging with customers, employees, stakeholders, individual contributors, and leaders who fit the model of economic man. Human beings, on the other hand, do not fit the model. Most people in business do not know anyone who fits the description of economic man. Why then are we so busy trying to do business with him or her when him or her does not even exist? Unlike the person described in economics and business school, humans are limited in their reasonableness. Humans are diverse and inconsistent in their preferences. Humans are even limited in their selfishness. Being generous and compassionate and charitable in unpredictable ways and at unpredictable times. Think random acts of kindness, which are trending. The issue. Nobel Prize-winning economic Gary Becker and Gary Becker's rational choice theory, also called preference theory in economics, has been extended to many other aspects of life. Becker's rational choice theory has been extended to areas as diverse as marriage, crime, and discrimination. Generalizations from rational choice theory to the social sciences at large have been a growth industry in the social sciences. From the rich mixture of inconsistencies and contradictions that most people really are in life, the human being has been translated into a function of rational, self-interested, and allegedly consistent preferences. The human, as such, has been simplified and redescribed as a rational, calculating engine of human behavior. That is not to say that is not an interesting and engaging thought experiment. One can produce some remarkable and engaging results in that way. Just don't forget that it doesn't map to any human being that you or I have ever met. People are supposed to be consistent in their preferences and tastes. People are supposed to be logical and consistently obey the rules. But finding counterexamples is easy. For example, if a person prefers coffee to hot chocolate, and the same person prefers hot chocolate to tea, then, according to the logic, the person is supposed to prefer coffee to tea. Think, coffee is preferred to hot chocolate is preferred to tea. Therefore, coffee is preferred to tea, according to the transitive rule in which preference is transitive. But no, it doesn't work that way. Given all these personal preferences indicated, the person still chooses tea instead of coffee. The person just prefers tea to coffee. The person is from London. Nothing inherently illogical exists in preferring coffee to hot chocolate and tea to coffee, while also preferring hot chocolate to tea. Nothing, unless one insists on making a dynamic network into a transitive sequence. So much for rational choice theory. What is the lesson here? Empathy as well as logic are required to understand decision making. Without allowing for the possibility of empathy, economics produces some strange results. People are not natural-born statisticians, logicians, or even gamblers, though the discipline of economics sometimes seems to assume so. Still, testing a person's decisions and preferences using probabilities, bets, and lotteries is an engaging exercise, and nothing is wrong in doing so. However, unless one also adds empathy to the mixture of economics and logic, one is missing something essential. The person, the human being, gets missed. Now, I apologize in advance to the reader and to the listener for the technical term, but in economics, the chance of winning a bet is expressed as an expected utility. Expected utility is technical talk for satisfaction or happiness. But nothing more than arithmetic is needed to get this. For example, in economics, the expected utility of a 10% chance of winning $1 million is $100,000. 10% of a million is $100,000. If Jack and Jill both end up with $1 million, they should enjoy the same expected utility, right? Remember, Jack and Jill are supposed to be rational, selfish, and consistent in their preferences. Now consider the counterexample. Today, Jack and Jill each have $1 million. Yesterday, Jack had zero and Jill had $2 million. Are they equally happy? Do they have the same utility? Heck no. You don't need an advanced degree to know that today Jack is very happy and Jill is in despair. Yesterday, Jack had zero. Now he has $1 million. Hooray! Jill had $2 million. Now she has only $1 million. Ouch! We must be able to put ourselves in the shoes of Jack and Jill and get a sense of their expectation. Sounds familiar? This is the folk definition of empathy. And it works very well, thank you very much. Take a walk in the other person's moccasins. These expectations, in turn, constrain their experiences of satisfaction. That is, Jack and Jill experience an expectation of satisfaction. To grasp the outcome in terms of their individual experiences, we need an empathic anchor or reference point in their expectations from which they begin. Empathy gives us access to an anchor point in their respective experiences. Our empathy shows that outcomes are linked to feelings about the changes of one's wealth rather than to states of wealth. And here, wealth goes proxy for all sorts of preferences, status, self-respect, esteem. The experience of value depends on the history of one's wealth, not only on the current state of it. Yet another bold empathy lesson. People are strongly influenced by hope and fear. Empathy indicates that people attach value to gains and losses, and these are weighted differently than logical probability in decision making. This is not just saying that people are irrational, though they may be true at times. This says that people and their behavior frequently do not conform to the pattern of rationality, selfishness, and consistency in preferences. Still, the matter is not hopeless for those committed to pattern matching in economics. People are frequently surprising, but sometimes in predictable ways. People are sometimes inconsistent, but one can sometimes predict those inconsistency if one learns one's empathy lessons. For example, number one, people are risk averse due to fear of disappointment and regret. The empathy lesson is that people try to avoid risks even in situations where taking a risk is a good bet. A good bet, key term, a good bet is determined according to the probability calculation. Consider, if a person had a 90% probability, 90% probability of winning $1 million, he ought to accept $900,000 as a sure thing settlement, which settlement is logically equivalent to a 90% probability of winning $1 million. 90% times $1 million equals $900,000. The 10% probability of not winning is an unlikely outcome, but is still possible, quite possible. The unlikely outcome often determines the result. Continuing the example, Lawsuits in cases of accidents and contract disputes produce settlements in trial law indicating that people will, quote-unquote, settle for $800,000 or even $750,000 for the possibility of knowing the outcome with certainty. Show me the money. Give me the money. For most people, that is still a lot of money, and the possibility of having to live with the regret of missing the payoff due to an unlikely, say, 10% outcome gets most people out of their comfort zone. People decide to settle, and that's not necessarily a bad decision. It just costs them, in this case, the $100,000 or $150,000, but they do end up with the better part of the settlement. Empathic receptivity to the possibility of disappointment and regret may usefully override the rational, self-interested, and consistent preferences that the purely economic person, homo economicus, the purely economic person brings to the negotiations. Number two, people are risk-seeking in the hope of getting an even larger gain instead of accepting a modest settlement. This is why people bet on the state lottery, where the chance of winning is vanishingly small. Such a bet is illogical, but common. We need expanded empathy to get a clue what is going on here. The empathy lesson indicates that people are not buying a chance to win a big pot of money. People, rather, are buying a chance to dream of the possibility of winning the big jackpot. "We are such stuff as dreams are made of," said Shakespeare. The value is in the dreaming. That is, precisely in the possibility of the big jackpot, not the jackpot itself. That such a dream would more likely be the dream of a poor person rather than an affluent one is a further problem that invites attention. If one looked rationally at the odds, one would not buy the ticket. No way. Clearly, lotteries are popular, especially with the poor and the have-nots. The possibility of escaping from poverty is being manipulated in a cynical way by the establishment, the authorities, and we, the citizens, have all become addicted in quotation marks, to the revenue stream. The lottery budget and effort would be better devoted to job training, instruction in basic financial management, except now lotteries have become a source of revenue for local government and education. I'm not against local government and education. This is a breakdown in empathic understanding, which empathic understanding gives us our possibilities. It is hard not to become a tad cynical in considering that the poor are paying for education through lottery revenue, even though they are often unprepared to benefit from or are hindered and stopped from getting access to the educational opportunities. No easy answer here. Take a look at what's going on. Number three, people are risk-seeking in the hope of avoiding a loss in situations in which simply stopping a project altogether would enable cutting their losses, rather than incurring additional likely losses. Defeat is difficult to accept. The empathy lesson is that people are attached to an ideal, in this case, a losing cause, for reasons extending from perseverance, egoism, greed, risk aversion, fear of the unknown, all the way to idealism, romance, blind hope, and just plain stubbornness. People and businesses facing a bad outcome manage to turn a survivable but painful failure into a complete meltdown. Don't take a bad situation and make it worse. This is easier said than done. Desperate gambles often make a bad situation worse in exchange for a small hope of avoiding the loss at all. Businesses, individuals, and even countries continue to expand resources long after they should have blown the bugle, lowered the flag, and left, implementing an orderly retreat. Instead, people and organizations persist in a lost cause until a rout becomes inevitable. Business accounting teaches the basic idea of a sunk cost. Key term, sunk cost. An imaginary example. Suppose Octopus Incorporated, OI, is building a new software system for $100 million. OI has already spent $150 million. The project is over budget. It is estimated to take another $55 million to complete the job. Suppose further that evidence of a new breakthrough technology really exists. It pans out. The evidence is in plain view. It would enable OI to develop the system from scratch for $25 million. What should OI do? The money already spent is a sunk cost. It should not influence the decision. Given the evidence that the new technology really works, the OI project leader should throw away the over-budget system and build the new one from scratch, spending $25 million and saving $30 million against the completed cost of the project as it stands. However, this is not what most project leaders would do. Due to a sense of ownership of the over-budget project and a fear of the unknown in engaging with the new technology, many project leaders double down. Sounds familiar? Double down on the investment in a losing proposition. In a breakdown of empathic interpretation, they continue to project their hopes and fears onto the old technology and, as the saying goes, throw good money after bad. Number four, people are risk averse due to a fear of a large loss and may rationally and usefully bet on a small chance of avoiding a large loss. This is why people buy insurance. The empathy lesson is that people are not merely buying protection against an unlikely disaster, they are buying peace of mind. They are buying the ability to get a good night's sleep. If the negative event would have catastrophic consequences, creating a risk pool in which everyone participates, spreading the risk in a manageable way, makes compelling sense. Note that certain risks, such as war and civil insurrection, or a giant asteroid hitting the Earth, are uninsurable. Uninsurable. Insurance is a calculation, not a gamble against undefined odds. In general, the insurance risk must relate to individuals or subgroups, and the occurrence of the risk should not destroy the infrastructure of the entire community, which needs to be intact to cover the insured risk. Insurance was a brilliant business innovation that emerged at about the time of the European Renaissance as traders in the Netherlands, those frugal Dutch, were sending valuable but fragile wooden ships to fetch precious cargoes in faraway lands. We're thinking 1492 kinds of stuff and Vasco da Gama going around the Cape of Good Hope. The risks and rewards were great. How to even out the odds? Insurance was born. In our own time, one can see the irrationality, the unempathic response, and gaming of the system by special interests, for example, in health insurance in the USA, where attempts were made to exclude the sickest people from the insurance pool through penalties for pre-existing illnesses, combined with charging monopoly rents to the healthiest participants. Insurance is often a good bet when an outcome that is highly unlikely but catastrophic can be managed by everyone or a large group, encourage a small cost to spread the risk. But how to get everyone at risk into the pool? When told that people have no health insurance, some politicians are supposed to have said, "Let them pay cash." In another context, in one of the most spectacular breakdowns in empathic responsiveness in modern European political history, the French Queen, Marie Antoinette, was told that the people had no bread. She is supposed to have said, "Let them eat cake." The same idea? Saying that the purpose of business is to make money is like saying the purpose of life is to breathe. Definitely don't stop breathing. keep breathing, and keep making money. But the purpose of life is to find satisfaction, to find fulfillment, to find satisfaction in one's work, raise a family, write the great American novel, it's good work if you can get it, experience one's efforts as contributing to the community or to the organization and making a difference. Likewise with business. Business is about delivering value and satisfying human demands and goals, whether nutrition, housing, transportation, waste disposal, health, risk management, education, entertainment, and so on. Even luxury and conspicuous consumption are human values which show up as market demands. In conclusion, business people get it. Empathy is good for business. Profit is a result of business strategy, implementation, and operations, not the why that motivates commercial enterprise. As Jack Welch pointed out, quote, shareholder value is a result, not a strategy. And if profit shows up that way, as a strategy, not the result, shows up as the why, then you can be sure it is a caricature of business and a limiting factor. The one possible exception is index derivative hedging, pure speculation on derivatives of derivatives in the market. That's hard to distinguish from gambling. Business prospers or fails based on its value chain and commitment to delivering value for clients and consumers. However, as noted, some of the things that make people, that make us good at business, make people relatively poor empathizers. Business leaders lose contact with what clients and consumers are experiencing as the leaders get entangled in solving legal issues, reacting to the competition, or implementing the technologies required to sustain operations. Yet empathy is never needed more than when it seems there's no time for it. This is a challenge to be engaged and overcome. What to do about it? Practice expanded empathy. Empathy is on the critical path to serving customers, segmenting markets, positioning products and substitutes. Empathy is on the critical path to psyching out the competition. Red team, red team. That's top-down empathy. Not exactly full-blown expanded empathy, but close enough. Building teams and being a leader who actually has followers. Empathy makes the difference for contributors to the enterprise at all levels, between banging on a rock with a hammer and building a cathedral. Think about it. The motions are exactly the same. One guy's banging on a rock in the hot sun. The other guy's building a cathedral, which requires banging on a rock in the hot sun. The one has satisfaction and fulfillment. The other's at hard labor. The motions are the same. When the application of empathy exposes and strengthens the foundation of community, then expanding empathy becomes synonymous with expanding the business. Building customer communities, building stakeholder communities, building teams that work are the basis for product innovation, brand loyalty, employee commitment, satisfied service level agreements, and sustained and growing market share. Can revenue be far behind? Sometimes leaders don't need more data. Leaders need expanded empathy, though ultimately both data and empathy are on the path to satisfied buyers, employees, and stakeholders. If the product or service is wrapped in empathy, has an empathic component as part of the service level agreement, gets traction in the market, and beats the competition's less empathic offering, then we have the ultimate validation of empathy. We do not just have empathy, we have empathy, capitalist tool.